Outlaws Podcast with your hosts, Derek Nasty Suttermeyer and former Philadelphia Flyer enforcer, Riley Cote, as they go behind the scenes with your favorite NHL players. This week's guest, NHL veteran goaltender and former Philadelphia Flyer, Steve Mason. Time to face off.
Alright, welcome back to Nasty Knuckles. What's happening, Nasty?
What's shaking, Rigorelia? Just having a little tea this morning.
Oh, a little tea? Caffeinated or non?
I think it's non, but I don't really need it. No, well, sometimes I do, but I had a good night's sleep last night.
There you go. Slept in.
So I did
7:45, man.
I don't know what happened. I woke up, it was light out. That never happens, man.
I think you're still recovering from the ball hockey tournament.
I'm feeling great. You're the one with the inflammation.
I did definitely have some inflammation. Yeah. Got some pockets in my knees going on right now.
Well,
heavily inflamed.
Yeah. So I battled through, played in our men's league game.
Oh, I don't know how you
which
did that.
You couldn't make.
Dude, we couldn't move.
Dude, we got drummed by the Blue Devils. Drummed, like beat on. And I think they started making a 5-pass rule.
Oh, man. Like,
kids, I'm just kidding. They may have. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. But
there's no chance I was making that. I could not move, honestly. It wasn't until yesterday that I could actually walk properly. It looked like I was I had some 2x4s strapped to my back of my hammies.
I had 3 ice baths from the time we finished playing until the next day for the men's league game. And I was still hurting, but, you know, I came in for my team. I was there, and the boys were upset with you.
I know they were.
Maddie wasn't there either. Maddie didn't make it. JD wasn't there. You weren't there. We had a fill-in. Tony Vos, our buddy. What happened to him? Nope, bail. I never said I was coming. Tony, I'm going to get you, brother. It was like us playing with only 5 guys in that ball hockey tournament. It was some work.
A couple bailouts there, too.
My God. Oh,
people don't realize what they're getting themselves into running like that, how much running is involved and playing against these National Ball Hockey League guys and how efficient they move and how lean. I mean, they're athletes. So
it's
not
good.
Just, Division III men's league where you can just stand still. Like there's no standing. There's nowhere to hide.
You know, there's a problem when your brain's telling your legs to run and you can't. And that's the first time that's ever happened to me in my life. I'm serious. I literally, by the end of when we're in that playoff game playing with 5 players, I was like, I literally can't run down to the court. I was staying around mid court and then just playing D, using my energy for D, which I was pretty damn stellar.
A couple
block shots. I'm kidding, man. Good stick. Yeah.
Stick on ball.
Good sticks. Our goalie, our boy McCracken, he's yelling, get out of the way. He just wants to see it. You know, he just wants to see the shot coming in. But man, what a weekend. It was awesome.
Yeah, it was.
Got to thank all of our, all the people that helped put, there's so many people that helped out, but you know, our sponsors, Sky Motors, Tovey, the National Ball Hockey League, Milek, Zatos, Body Check, Suttermeyer Hockey, and so many more people that just came over to help out. And I was so happy with the turnout, Riggs. I couldn't believe how many people came.
Yeah, it was awesome. Yeah, it was nice to see Franny show up with his masks and just support. He's been a huge supporter of ours for a long time.
And Caitlin,
Blade Shades.
And the wraparound.
And the Warriors guys.
Awesome.
You know.
loved having them there, man.
They're all beauties, and I didn't think they knew what they were getting themselves into as far as the amount of work. But they had some fun.
They had a couple coolers of beer and some pizza. They were happy.
Exactly.
It was awesome having them there, man.
So overall,
especially on 9/11, you know?
Yeah, exactly. No, exactly. But a great day. The weather was perfect. Any hotter would have been probably too much, but it was a little breeze. But overall, awesome. Really appreciate the National Ball Hockey League guys for supporting this and working with us. And it's so professional the way they operate and how they make these tournaments work. So we'll be doing it again in the spring and then the fall. Gonna stay out of the summertime weather because it's a little too much.
Unless we've got 100 cold tubs out there, I do not. Yeah,
maybe that's
play.
What we need next year. Any pool sponsors out there that want to get involved? Maybe have a nice big cold tub set up in the middle of the three rinks there in between games.
I could have used it that day.
Oh no,
that would have been key. I'm telling you.
Self-preservation.
Well, I never thought we'd be playing with five guys either, and we do have to say we've never really played street hockey. But we were playing on a full rink, full-size rink, 4-on-4 with guys that do this every week. We lost 2 games in overtime, which is pretty impressive.
Yep.
I know it was probably pissing everybody off because they know how to play that game. We're kind of winging it, but yeah. we had a great goalie. And we won a game with Farzi, Mark Farzetta, the big G-dub. I think that was the only goal Selly I saw all day when he put that in. He said to me, Farsi said, man, what a great pass. All I was thinking was, I remember hearing you guys always say, stick on the ice, stick on the ice. I'm like, well, we weren't on the ice, but stick on the ground, you know, whatever. Yeah, right. But he's like, that's all I was thinking. I said, see, buried it, man.
I'm surprised he had the energy to celebrate.
Oh, he was pumped. I loved it, though. I was like, oh, my God, we might win. He scored that with about 2 minutes to go. I'm like, they pulled the goalie. They're just taking rippers. I'm like, oh, God, don't hit me.
Yeah, that was the strategy, ripping balls from every possible angle and shooting for rebounds and then catching guys turning towards the net and scooping up the trash.
You had a couple G's, too.
A couple apples.
Yeah. I had three, but who was counting, you know? Lucky.
Well, it was a great time. So we look forward to doing that again. And appreciate everybody that was involved in helping make this thing a success. So anything else going on in the hockey world, Nast?
Want to say a quick congratulations to our good friend, Paul Holmgren, USA Hall of Fame. Great honor, man. He deserves it. He's been a real positive influence during my career as an equipment manager. I don't know if you say career, but you know what 100%. I was doing. He always supported me, and he was kind of a second dad for me. So, congratulations, Mr. Holmgren. It's a huge honor, man.
Yeah, I appreciate Homer too. He was probably my number one fan, and probably one of the main reasons I was even with the Phantoms, let alone the Flyers. So, nothing but respect for Homer and you know, all the amazing stuff he's done in the hockey world and how he's overcome some personal battles and really just thrived, not just survived. And it's amazing to see. And then now he's, you know, inducted into the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame, which is there's a ton of big names there. So
for sure. It's awesome.
All right, Nas, let's jump into episode 40 with 4-0. Our man, Steve Mason. Let's go.
He's daddy. Let's go.
Welcome back to another episode of Nasty Knuckles. I'm Riley Cote.
And I'm Derek Settlemyer. And this week, we are so happy to have our main man, number 35, Stone Cold Steve Mason. What's up, Mace Daddy?
Not too much, guys. It's great to see you. It's been too long.
Yeah, you too.
No kidding, man. Way too long. I see you on, well, we text a lot, but I basically only get to see you on Instagram, man. And it looks to me, my first question is going to be, what the heck are you up to? But it looks to me like you're cooking a lot, on the boat a lot, really having a tough time. But I know you probably are because you have 3 young daughters, and it's probably harder on Brittany than you. But what's going on, man?
Yeah, you know what? It's been 3 years out of the game now, and the first year was kind of a blur being off, and then you kind of settle into a whole new routine. And yeah, as you touched on, I've got three young girls right now, 3 daughters, and I got a 5-year-old, 3-year-old, and a 9-month-old. So it's a busy household, and we've been spending a lot of time. We got a cottage up north, which is unbelievable, and doing a lot of boating and things like that in the summertime, and just kind of enjoying things and trying to again settle into the new normal for me, not being around the game of hockey, which, you know, for Riley, I'm sure you can kind of attest to, it's an adjustment to get away from your daily routine that you basically live with for your entire life. Right. So, in saying that, I'm very happy with where we're at and looking forward to seeing the girls grow up and whatever else may come our way here.
Yeah. Awesome, yeah. Live the life, man. You deserve it. You know, it's like all that hard work. You may as well take advantage of the boat and the lake and really just spend the time, that precious time with your children, because that's, you know, it's priceless for sure.
Yeah, you don't get those early years back with them. Right. Okay. And when I was still playing, I just had the one daughter and, you know, there's little things that you miss along the way. I missed the first birthday and things that you can't get back. Right. So the silver lining is now I'm around all the time and, you know, I get to help out with things and you'll be around for small little moments that otherwise, you know, you would have taken for granted and it's nice to be there for it, you know?
Yeah.
But at the end of the day too, you miss the day to day of, you know, having a purpose and things like that, going to the rink, being with the boys, traveling, the nice dinners, you know, you miss that kind of, you don't necessarily, in my opinion, miss the game so much, but it's just being around the boys, everything that comes around with being a hockey player, right? So you kind of get into your new norm, which I was saying.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's inevitable. That. And the whole routine thing, I think, is challenging, right? Because you're so regimented for so many years and the season schedule and the weekly schedule and the daily schedule is handed to you. And, you know, and there's just like this sequence of events that just occur every single day. And obviously they still do in your world now, changing diapers and whatever else. But
dishes,
it's just a little bit different.
Dishes. Right. You should be thanking us. We got you out of the dishes tonight.
Yeah, right.
That's right. That's one of my main chores of the household is doing the after dinner dishes. This is getting me out of that, which is greatly appreciated. But yeah, you know what? For when you're playing hockey, you're always, you know, on somebody else's time, right? You got the team schedule. You got to be here for that meeting, and you're away from the game now, and it's all your time. And it's almost like, well, fuck! Like, what do you do with all this time, right? So, got to find a way to fill the days, and you know, having three kids obviously is busy, but. It gets to the point where it's okay, what's next?
Right. So. Yeah. I didn't play like you guys, but obviously, you know, I was around it for 25 years and we've talked about this before, man. I struggled so hard at first just because I had a routine. Like I got up so early every morning and, you know, and all I would think in my head is, well, right now I'd be doing this, right now I'd be doing that, you know, like, I'm going to lose my mind because, you know, but I started my thing pretty much right away. And then fortunately enough, Riley and I put our heads together but in our case, I don't know if two heads are better than one, you know, we came up with, this plan and what we wanted to do. And, we're having a ball with it and it's been so much fun, but you're right, man. Everyone that's out of the game that we've talked to is like, the biggest thing is like everyone says the same thing, like the being there in the morning, the coffee, you know, shooting the shit, the laughs, you know, the dinners. It is what you really miss. That's one of the hardest things. And with everything getting started up right now, like Provorov was over today. We were just shooting the shit and I'm like, ah, I kind of miss this time, you know, with everybody coming back in and everybody's fired up for the season.
Good time of year.
Anyway, yeah, man, it's good to see you're doing well. You doing anything with hockey at all?
I am. Well, obviously, this past year was a complete write-off. I'm sure it was down in the States, too, in terms of youth sports and all that. But the year prior to that, my first year being out of playing, my hometown in Oakville, which is just outside of Toronto, about 30 minutes west of Toronto, I played all my minor hockey there. And it just came up, some of my friends do some work for the organization, and goaltending came up. They said, well, our buddy Steve Mason, he's not really doing anything right now. Maybe it's a fit. So I ended up helping out with all the goalies in the organization all the way from, you know, 6 years old all the way up to their draft year in minor midgets. So that's 15 years old. So,
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Some weeks I was out of the house five nights a week, going to practices, running private lessons and really enjoyed working with the kids and, you know, keeping my head in the game a little bit and just being around that, give back a little bit to, you know, my minor hockey organization, which was fun. Then obviously last year was a complete write-off with COVID, and then we're just going to be starting up here in the next week or so, get back on the ice with the kids and run some private lessons. And, you know, I have fun with it. It keeps me a little bit busy throughout the week, and it's nice just to kind of be around the kids too and seeing them have fun before it gets too political, you know?
Oh my God.
Which is not too far away.
It's not, because Elvis just turned 7, a month or two ago, and he's a mite.
Yeah.
And when I started my skate, shop, I get parents coming in here pissed off this and that. And I'm just learning this, the kids part, like which you both went through as kids playing hockey. So you probably know about the political side of things where this kid made it because their parents are working at the rate, and
they threw a little extra money to the
pay to play.
So luckily his group is a really good group of parents and coaches and the kids. So we haven't had any of that. I hope I don't have to deal with it, but I feel for the parents when they come in and they're dealing with it, and who knows, some may be the parents that are the ones that are knocking a kid out. I don't know. I try not to get into it, but I got a good group of people anyway, but that's cool. Well, you're able to give back. And
it's fun for the on ice portion. But then it gets political with the parents, because I'm already getting emails being, well, what do you think about this? We really think that our son has a future. And like, well, of course it does, but I'm just here to help out on the ice. I don't want to deal with any of this extra.
My son's going to play in the NHL. He's playing in the NHL. I'm telling you right now.
Yeah. I do got to ask you, Mace, as far as like, raw talent versus like the way that the game is coached now. I see this with like, you don't see a bad skater, right? Everyone's like so skilled now. Do you see the same thing in goaltending? Like where they're just like better athletes and they're just,
It's so different from when I was growing up or you were growing up. It's just like a full-time job for kids that are, I'm seeing kids that are on the ice all year long and they're 7, 8 years old and they're not playing different sports or anything like that. And it might get them, to step up to have their skills a little bit further advanced than where I was at 7 years old. But in saying that, I feel that the kids are going to get burnt out, 12 months a year. Go fucking play another sport. Go play soccer. Right. Play lacrosse.
Exactly.
Go play
baseball.
Be around different kids.
Yeah.
Because you're going to get, meet new people. The parents are going to get tired of being around the hockey parents as well, right?
Right.
So it kind of just gives everybody a fresh kind of feel for when hockey season rolls around. And I think just in general too, for the goalie position, which is obviously, I can't comment too much on defense or forwards and how their skills work, but for goalies, it's a position I think that definitely takes a little bit longer for them to figure out how to play. So you're not really seeing kids that are 6, 7 years old that really stand out, because there's so much to learn to be a goalie, and skating is such a huge part of that, as I'm sure Nasty you're seeing with Elvis. You're moving around with your skating, but you're moving around and skating with pads on, right? So that's a whole nother aspect. But just the amount of money that parents throw at the game now and the year-round training. Like, hockey's not a cheap sport to play.
No.
And when you're playing it 12 months a year, you add on all these kids now have to have the best, the coolest equipment, the one piece sticks. I got 3 girls. I'm not sure if they're going to be hockey players, but I'm going to be
goalies
from the goalie equipment,
How old were you, Mace, when you actually decided I want to be a goalie?
I played hockey for 2 or 3 years. I think I was 9 when I switched full time.
Okay.
Oh, really? Okay.
But I always knew I wanted to be a goalie. When practices rolled around, if the goalie didn't show up, I would pop a net. At those ages too, we rotated a lot too. But I always wanted to play. Playing road hockey after school, nobody wanted to be the goalie, but I always wanted to be a goalie. So it was something I always wanted to do. And then, I think it was when I was 9, came time to register for hockey. And I said, this is the year I want to do it. my dad said, yeah, no problem. My mom says, are you fucking crazy? Like, no way, right?
Yeah, right.
And so that was it. That was the rest of the game.
I've told this story before, Mace. I was telling Hexy when he was here, Ron Hextall, that, you know, Elvie, he just wants to put the pads on all the time. Yeah. And I'm like, you know, but he likes to play out too. But he's every night, he's like, can I put the, you know, we shoot on me? And I'm like, yeah. And he goes, Deke, because that's what he called me, Deke. He always called me Deke. He goes, Deke, take a street hockey ball and fire it right off his forehead. He goes, he'll be done. And I said, Hex, he's 4. He goes, yeah, I know. And he'll never play goalie again. He goes, he'll cry. It's going to hurt. I can't fucking hit my 4-year-old fucking mind with a hockey ball.
Hexy forgot that he was a goalie and a goalie for a real long time.
No, listen. Yeah. Hexy always would say, I'm not in a union. I gave my card away. I'm like, you can't. I'm like, he goes, those guys are fucking crazy. I said, what?
Yeah.
And Billy Smith might be the 1 and 2. Right, yeah.
Like, I remember one time after a game, we were sitting in the dressing room after just kind of unwinding and whatnot, and Hexy rolls in, and I forget what I fucking did, but he's like, well, what the fuck was that? I was like, Hexy, do you not remember what kind of fucking goalie you were? Like,
yeah.
I'm like, he's like, I'm not a goalie anymore, all right? That's, I'm on the other side of things. Like, yeah. So.
That's what he would always say. He's like, I gave my card up, Deke. I'm like, you can't give your card away, man. That's not how it works. But
tender for life.
Used to make me laugh, man. You got to have a Hitch story for us.
I didn't deal with Hitch a lot just because he was the head coach, and goalies typically don't deal with the head coaches a whole lot, right? You got your own goalie coach, but fuck, we were in Columbus, obviously, and I don't know if we walk in the room, in the dress room there in Columbus, and you walk in the main entrance, and off to the left is the coach's office, and then off to the right is the locker room where you put your street clothes and all that, right? So the boys were walking in. When I was there, we were all young. We all lived in the same, it was like, fuck, we lived in dorm rooms. There was an apartment complex across from the arena, and there was probably 6 or 7 of us that all walked or lived there. So every morning we'd all walk across together, and fuck, we roll into their dress room, and Hitch is in his room, and he's got his fucking shirt off, right?
Flexing.
Sitting there getting a fucking massage by our fucking massage therapist, and Hitch has buried his fucking head in the fucking table, right, like this, and fuck, massage therapist is looking at just like puking in his mouth a little bit, right? So we're walking in, whatever. That was the end of that story. And then another time, we always had a fucking bagels and muffins from Tim Hortons. It was just part of like the breakfast spread, right? And that was in the players' lounge area. So we're sitting on the couch, kind of watching the morning sports highlights, and Hitch walks in and grabs a chocolate chip muffin, rips it in half, and puts the other half back. He's like, well, kind of just watching what I'm eating here, and walks off. 5 minutes later, comes in, gets the other half there, right? And then he probably came in for the other fucking portion of it, the other muffins too. And then, man, I got one more. We're having our video meeting, and he throws a Halls in his mouth. And, you know, Hitch has sometimes you can have a higher pitched voice, especially when you get screaming and everything that, right? So he's talking about how he got to fucking compete and all this shit, right? And he throws a Hall in his mouth, and, you know, he starts sucking on it. He sucks too hard, and he goes down and gets caught in the throat there, right? So he's fucking hacking on it. And I mean, fuck. Unless you know the man, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
He means so well, and away from the game, he's such a nice man, right?
He is.
He sometimes can get a bad rap from the players, and, you know, wearing thin on guys sometimes, but
yeah,
you know, I don't want to say too many.
No, I know.
Right? But yeah, you know how he is.
I was fortunate. He was really good to me, and that was because of John Stevens. So he was really good with me. And again, he was let go like 9 games in that year. We had a tough year. So I didn't get I got some really good stories from the 9 games, but just hearing him, you know, talking to the fuck, fuck,
you got to compete. You got to compete.
You're playing sideways. Like, that's the first time I ever heard, you know, like, you can say that all the time. Play the right way. Yeah. You know, like, oh God.
He's a character.
But yeah, he was a character. But
like the time he blamed Freddie Meyer for bending and denting the foam roller. Every morning he'd have this routine. He'd go on his elliptical. He'd read the full newspaper in a sweat jacket. I don't even think he sweat.
I was going to say, how fast was he going on?
Yeah, the slowest cruise control. Oh. Then he'd get off, and he would get on the foam roller, which was part of his routine. And then, I don't know, it was halfway through the season. Or no, it wasn't the it was like the early part of the season, because that was the year he got fired. He's like, Freddie, he's like, did you bend this foam roller? And, you know, Freddie's like a $180, you know, ripped jack.
Maybe
$175. And he was dead serious. He was accusing Freddie of bending this foam roller, and you know, the Hitch, I don't know, might not have been Freddie. He might have been. And then the same thing with the protein bars he did with the muffins there. He said he would eat half of it. And he's like, half a protein bar, and then he'd come back for the other half, and then two halves, three halves, and he's just forgetting the math on it. But yeah, he's clever. Yeah. All strategy with Hitch, right?
Yeah, how do you keep those protein bars stacked or stock for him, eh?
Yeah. He never got mad at me, but I've told the story a million times. I won't tell it, but he did not like me drinking the Red Bulls
too jacked.
He was just, you got to be calm, cool, and collected, young Derek. I'm like, you got to be fucking ready, Hitch. You know, he goes,
all the hours you're pulling, you got to take whatever you got to take.
Good point. Jesus Christ. Oh, man.
You want to play good? You want to play great?
Yep.
Sure understood that.
That's what they said, man. That's what they used to say. your coaches, like, who were your coach? Who were your other coaches in Columbus, actually?
I went from Hitch to Scott Arneal.
Oh yeah, Scott. That's when they started. Was that his first year where they started like behind the eight ball, like so bad?
Oh yeah, we lost. No, I was never there with Torts. I was there. This was Arneal, and then we had Todd. Arneal was fired, and then Todd Richards, who was our assistant at the time, took
over. That's right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, with Arneal, we never. I mean, my first year in Columbus, we had made the playoffs there. It was a good year, and then the last couple of years was a shit show, and I didn't play very well, and the team wasn't performing, and Arneal was fired after a year and a half, and then Todd Richards took over, and then I was traded to the Flyers, and at that time, Labby was still the coach, so I got traded there. I think that was a lockout year that I was traded to the Flyers there, but
well, going back a second, your rookie year, let's don't look past that. You had 33 wins, and you won the Calder Memorial Trophy, which is, I mean, amazing, especially, you know, that's for every rookie player. That's not just a goaltending thing. That had to be unbelievable for you, being a young kid like that.
Yeah, you know, I don't even think it's kind of, I kind of played off maybe a little bit. I was like, it was a cool thing, but, you know, it's a major NHL award, which
big time.
But yeah, you know, the first year was just such a whirlwind. I didn't start the season with the team. As most goalies do, you start in the American Hockey League. But I had I missed all training camp because I had a knee surgery. So started off behind the eight ball there, and then finally rehabbed that. Went down to Syracuse, where the Blue Jackets affiliate was at the time. I'm not sure where they are now, but went down to Syracuse. Played three games there, and at the time the Jackets starter was Pascal LeClaire. He got hurt, so after three games, the American League got called up just on an emergency basis. Was supposed to be back supposed to be up for a week and a half at most, so packed, you know, a small suitcase, didn't really have a lot of clothes with anticipation of going right back. And then my first game backing up, or was supposed to be backing up, morning skate. Our other goaltender, Freddie Narina, pulled his groin or something in morning skate. So, and I wasn't even aware of that. I stayed on for the extra work, practice and all that. So I get off the ice, and Hitch pulls me into his office, and he's like, Macy's like, do you want to play tonight? I'm like, yeah, sure. He's like, well, I'm here. So I'm like, holy shit. I'm like, are you fucking serious?
So, Steve, do you want to play?
Yeah, he's like, do you want to play? So I said, fuck yeah. So I went back, you know, had pregame meal and went back to the hotel because I was staying in the hotel. And
could you sleep?
I couldn't fucking sleep a wink, man. I was like, I was nervous and I was excited, had fucking anxiety, had like all these emotions going on, right? Called my parents, and rookie contracts state that, you know, the team will fly your parents in for your first game, but it was so short notice that they couldn't get in for it, but, you know, no big deal. So get to the rink, and we were played Edmonton. We ended up winning in overtime, and I didn't play great, but, you know, we still won, which was awesome. And then played the next game and then the next game. And I think a couple of games after that, and Scott Housen was the GM at the time there. And he said, you know, how much clothes did you bring with you? I said, I'm kind of out. I was like, I'm starting to have to do laundry at the hotel, and it's kind of not the best situation. He's like, well, you obviously don't have your vehicle here. I said, no, it's back in Syracuse. He's like, well, find a way to get your truck here and get the rest of your, you know, a good portion of your clothes here. So my parents went to my place in Syracuse that I hadn't even moved into. It was a brand new spot that all my clothes were sitting in my truck in the parking lot of the condo building I was supposed to move into. And parents drove down to Columbus with my truck and the rest of my clothes. And that was it. I said,
look back.
I mean, and then the year just went on, and, you know, as you said, there was 33 wins and some shutouts along the way, and just things just happened really easy that year, which was a bad thing for me. Cause after that year, I said, well, fuck, that was, you know, easy, and it's not an easy league. And the next year was an eye opener for me, and struggled to kind of find my way after that. And then, as I said, you know, got traded to the Flyers, and that was during the lockout year. And I remember getting on the fucking plane, and those last couple of years in Columbus really did a number on me, and mentally, and just was just shot mentally. And I remember getting on the plane and sitting there and just said, you know, this is either going to be a new start or it's going to be it. Which way are we going to go? And got to Philly, and knew some of the guys there already, which was nice to go into a setting where you already knew some of the boys, played the World Juniors with a handful of them there. So, it was good to get out of Columbus and do a new, fresh situation, right?
Yeah, for sure, man. You walked in, you came into Philly and dropped 33 wins there.
Yeah.
In first year. So I think you had a great stint while you were here. I hated to see you go. We, you know, became pretty good buddies. And
yeah, you know what? I absolutely loved every minute of playing with the Flyers. Good moments, bad moments, whatever it was. When after my contract was up there and I didn't get an offer presented, I was really disappointed because I didn't want to leave in any way, shape, or form. And then obviously went to Winnipeg after Philly, and things never worked out there. And had a tough year in Winnipeg with some injuries. Didn't start off playing well, and then Hellebuck came in and just stole the show, and that was basically it. And got traded, or the contract was traded to Montreal, and then bought out on the free agency there, which was a whole nother story in terms of, you know, getting traded on free agency day, where the lead up to free agency, you know, there's already contracts in place and agreed upon. So I was kind of left high and dry, and I kind of just checked out after that and said, you know, that was it. But yeah, not getting brought back to Philly was that sucked. I was disappointed with that.
Love
playing there. Love being around the guys there, the whole staff in general, you know, playing at Wells Fargo Center was just an amazing experience too. Right. So I was definitely disappointed not to come back.
Yeah, I bet. Hey, can you talk about your mindset a little bit? You mentioned it briefly. You know, you're kind of deflated in Columbus, and it seems to be like when a guy goes to a new team, there's like a new energy, a new spirit in them, and then they have this, you know, opportunity to kind of recreate themselves, which you did. You mean you spent, what, 5 years? Parts of 5 years there in Philly?
Yeah.
And then the opposite kind of happened on the tail end in Winnipeg, where it's like, you know, you're so dispirited now. It's like, you know, it's like... But just talk about the mindset there, because I don't think people realize, like, the psychology behind the sport, especially, you know, maybe specifically goaltending, but then, you know, having to go somewhere else and kind of revitalize your career.
people look at, in my opinion, they, you know, they see the NHL and the lifestyle that you're able to live and, you know, quote unquote celebrity status and, you know, making good money and all this. And I'm not trying to make a sob story or anything, but, you know, at the end of the day, there's still a lot of human emotion involved and you're still a human being and whatnot. So when I was in Columbus, first year, obviously everything went too smooth. Like there was no real hiccups along the way. And, you know, as a young goalie, I was 20 years old, I guess, my first year, and the toast of the town, so to speak. You know, here comes young goalie, and we made the playoffs that year, and rookie of the year, and, you know, nothing but really, you know, good things that had happened that year. So you go out for dinner, and you go to the mall, and people are, oh my God, hey, there's Steve Mason, and yeah, holy shit, like, this is kind of cool, and whatnot.
It happens to me daily. I mean,
yeah, they're nasty.
You know? I'm kidding. It's not a fucking.
And then you know, then you come back the second year and struggled, but there's still a positive vibe from the year before, from the fan aspect. And then third year rolls around, and again, wasn't playing well. And then that was obviously wearing thin on the fans, and I'm still a really young guy at that point, trying to figure out how to be a better goalie, how to be a pro. Cause that's a whole other aspect, right? You go from playing junior hockey and if you're a good junior hockey player, there's a definite skill variation from the top player to the bottom players, where the NHL is obviously different. Right. So the third year rolls around, and the fans are they're not happy with me being the goaltender there. And, you know, the starting introductions happen, you know, starting in goal, number one, Steve Mason, and I'm getting booed in the home arena, which fucking sucks.
That's fun, yeah, right?
Yeah, you know, and like, I'm not trying to play poorly. It's just I'm struggling to figure out as a young goalie.
Well, Mace, not to just take up for you here, but I mean this for all goalies, like, it's not just on the goalie.
Yeah.
Like, and I know you're not going to say, well, our team wasn't that good, but sometimes your team's not that good in front of you. Yes, you're the last line of defense and you're expected to be there to make that save. I get it. I'm not trying to take up for goalies. But a lot of time, you know, people, you know, some people see it, some people don't.
Yeah.
You know, people that really know hockey understand it, but that's no fun being at home.
Yeah, that's no fun at all.
I mean, that's not.
And, you know, especially, like I said, you know, being young, I had never really gone through the real down parts of playing hockey. Cause you know, growing up minor hockey was a pretty good goaltender. Junior hockey was a good goaltender. And obviously the first year in the NHL was good. So to try and figure out and navigate through some of the downsides of the game and the experience of playing pro hockey. And, you know, you can't just hide because now you got publicity, you got the reporters and all that. So there's, you know, negative stuff said in the papers, and then it's just like a snowball effect, and it kind of is right up top, and, you know, mental health has become a huge thing. And I didn't know it at the time, but I was really struggling with it. And then going into my fourth year in Columbus, I remember leaving at the end of summer and like having like anxiety that I had to go back to Columbus because I just had such negative feelings there.
That's the thing people don't understand, right. You know, and
then
PTSD that, almost.
Exactly. And then that summer, the Blue Jackets had traded for Bob, so Bobrovsky, right? And so the writing's on the wall there, obviously, basically time's up there. And I actually started out the year playing better than him, but, you know, obviously they're trying to get him to be the guy and giving him the opportunity. And I remember my last game there, we might have even been playing Edmonton, so it ended where it started, playing Edmonton, and I got pulled after halfway through the second period or whatever, and just like the head's going a million miles an hour, just going over crazy stupid shit, right? And
yeah,
thinking about things that you have no control over. And I remember driving home is my 15 second drive across the street. I remember sitting in my fucking parking garage, and I called because I would always call my parents after a game, just, you know, quick touch base. Like, how you doing? Good game, bad game. And I remember sitting in the parking garage talking with my dad, and he's just like, are you okay? And I said, I didn't even know what to say. Like, I was just so lost. And then I may have played another game or two after that, leading up to the deadline. And wasn't sure if I was going to be traded at all or what would happen come the deadline. I knew in my head that if I wasn't traded, no matter where it was, if I wasn't traded, I wouldn't be playing hockey next year because I was just shot. Mentally, I was shot. I didn't have fun playing, didn't want to. I was just mentally drained from dealing with it in Columbus. And lo and behold, I got a call from fucking Paul Holmgren on the trade deadline day and saying, hey, Paul Holmgren of the Philadelphia Flyers, we've just traded for you. Can you get on a plane? And I think I had 2 hours to get, I think I had like 40 minutes to get to the airport. He had a flight booked for me in record time and packed up my shit. And as I've said a little bit earlier, got on the plane and said, okay, we either go this way or we go that way. What's it going to be? And at the time, Reeser, Jeff Reese, was the goalie coach there with the Flyers. And he was, I guess, a big advocate for me when I was playing junior hockey with the London Knights. And he was with Tampa at the time. And I guess he liked me in junior. And I guess Reeser was a big part of bringing me to the Flyers. And got to Philly. And I've loved every second of it.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
You know, it's just awesome. You know, as Riley and obviously Nasty too, you were such a huge part of that organization for so many years. It's just you know, you take the fans might boo you here and there, but just like the feeling that you get putting on the jersey, I mean, nothing.
Yeah,
right. So.
Right. Great organization.
Well, that's an amazing story, you know, because it's just almost like, you know, when the universe knows what you need type of deal. Yeah. It's like, you know, I can imagine as soon as you got that phone call, you felt some sort of relief.
Yeah.
Like there was some sort of spirit injected back into you immediately.
Dude, I felt a million pounds lighter and yeah. I didn't know what was going to happen to Philly. Cause at that time, we had Briz on a big, long-term deal and I didn't even care what my situation was going to be. I just like, I'm happy to be going to a whole new environment. New players, new staff, new fans.
Yep.
A new condo to live in, even though the first year I was living in the across from Voorhees there, the fucking hotel there. What's it called? Right across from the skate zone.
Not the Hampton Inn?
No,
down the street.
I don't know.
So that's a Holiday Inn now.
No. I don't even know what it is, yeah. But I stayed there for the better part of 3 months and I didn't give a shit.
Maybe
I
was 15 second walk there.
It was like the Ritz Carlton. It's like the Ritz Carlton.
Well, at that time too, we had just traded for Rosie. He had just got traded as well. And you know Rosie, like one of the best guys I've met in the game. So we got real tight through that whole post trade deadline situation, and it just worked out really well. And
I gotta tell, I don't know if I ever told you this, Riley, because you're obviously not a goalie, but I get Mace, we hit it off, everything was great. You talk about Mace like having those issues, like where your mind like scrambling and you're thinking, dude, I will say this, there were a couple times where like, I mean, right before a game or even during a game, Mace needed something. And like, if I didn't have it right on me, he's like, okay, no big deal. So. I was just always impressed, Mace, you know, with how nothing during a game, like fazed you as far as if something didn't go right. But I do have to also say we get Mace. He's got brand new pads, but they're light blue and navy. Right. Oh, so he says, they're in the team picture. So the funny thing is, so like, you know, goalies, they always, the most probably sets of gear I'd ever seen someone go through is like, probably the most would be 4. I mean, that's pushing it, 3 to 4. Mace comes in, he's like, yeah, you got to get some, obviously he's talking to CCM, get his pads. He says, you probably want to get 2. I'm like, well, we only have like this many games, you know, it's the deadline and everything. You had a couple, you know, some gloves and some blah. I'm like, oh, okay. How long do you like to wear them? You know, like 2 weeks or so. I'm like, whoa, what? 2 weeks? I'm like, what? I said, are you serious? And he goes, yeah. So my favorite thing was Mace's little way of letting me know the pads were like broken down was he'd take everything over the heater. Put them on the glove dryers after the skate.
Badly though across.
Oh yeah, but, and I'm like, Mace, you're making them soft. No, I'm not. And we were like, I'm like, Mace, it's softening them up. No, it's making them harder because he liked them brand new. So we literally, I mean, it was funny because we talked. Speaking of Bob Borofsky, he went through two pair a year. He went to Columbus, and then he turned into Mace getting 12 pairs of pads a season. I'm like, I've never seen, I didn't mind because the Flyers have that deal with Migraine. So they're getting their money back anyway. Right. So it's not even a big deal, but I was just shocked because most goalies, like even Moose, who I was able to have the last few years, Moose would only go through like two pair, man. Maybe three.
Moose would always have a lot of bend in his pads too, though, right?
Yeah. He liked that.
Like the softer pad.
Yeah. But it was just funny. Riles, Mace was like, dude, I'm like, you might be the first goalie we can do two sets of gear with. And he's like, I'll do it. But the problem is, you give him the new pads at practice, he wanted to wear those in the game.
Oh, yeah.
So he couldn't do two sets with him because he was ready. I could have probably given him a new pair of pads every day. He would, what would you do? Like, you maybe practice once or twice, maybe?
Yeah, I like a new set. It all started when I played with the London Knights in the OHL there. At that time, the Knights had a deal with Vaughan because the Vaughan manufacturing factory was in right in London, Ontario, or one of their factories was in London. So they had a good deal with the brand. And at the time, Jorg was the man or
Jorg
rep. Yeah, so we had a good relationship. And for a junior goalie, I was treated really, really well in terms of how many sets of gear I could have. And one of my sets of pads that I was supposed to be wearing that night in junior hockey, not pregame skating or anything like that, right? So one of my pads got sliced in, I guess, a game or practice the day before, and nobody realized it. So, you know, some of the padding is hanging out, and we noticed that the morning of the game, we were there for like a stretch or something. And so I showed it to our equipment manager, Chris Madden, who's the
Matt,
yeah, because he had the exhibition games there, right?
Yeah, so love him.
I said, Matt, I said, you know, what's going on? Like, can we get that fixed? Oh, I don't know. She says, let's get Jorg over here. Fucking Vaughn produced a pair of pads in like 12 hours for me. Had it there for the game that night.
Remember that story.
Dale Hunter's my coach there. I put the brand new set of pads on without ever wearing them. Wore them in the game that night. We won, but I let a goal five hole in, right? It wasn't a great goal. And we were leaving after the game to drive up to Sudbury for a game the next night. And Dale pulls me aside as I'm about to get on the bus. He's like, what's this I hear about you wearing a brand new set of pads? He's like, that's why that fucking five hole goal went. He's like, if you want to play tomorrow night, you're bringing your old set of fucking pads. No way. So yeah, I always liked a stiffer pad. And then I was a big sweater. Like I go through a jersey every period, right?
I have
three sets of gitch, so all this, but you know, that would break down the gloves. But I just like the stiffer pad, and then
he did.
You know, I thought that was part of being the perk of being an NHL player.
You always got them.
You were always good too.
I was actually worried that they weren't going to make them quick enough for me. So I'm like, dude, I remember telling Hugo, I'm like, hey, you got to get like two sets. As soon as I order two, get two more going.
That's right.
So
I can
have
always,
them.
Yeah.
I was always worried. You walk in the back room and there's like four sets of Mace's pads.
I'd always go back in like the back like storage area. They would play that
around. Oh yeah.
That's great.
New pads arrived at the arena. It was like Christmas morning for me.
Yeah, every time. And they were coming all the time.
I'd trim up like the straps to the length that I would like it. I'd put like the Loctite on the Gateau strap area and just mess around with it that. But then the whole other aspect was having the mask and things like that. And I mean, that's part of being a goalie though.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, hey, man. Right? So. Totally.
I don't blame you.
Funny, you brought Matt's up. I got a quick little story about it. His son, we used to play. Roz, did you ever play an exhibition game there in London? Because we played.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So his son was younger at the time. He was like stick boy. And he helped out. Obviously, I'm sure he did with the team.
Yep.
With the Knights.
Yeah, he was always around.
I was always like, yeah, bring him stuff, like Flyer stuff. And he was a funny kid. So I think at this time he was about 13, and I didn't realize he was standing beside me because he had grown.
Oh, yeah.
So he's beside me, and I've got, I think, Adam from Forte was there. He had brought us lunch, and Ross Agathos and then Matt's and a couple other people, and we're standing there goofing off. And I'm like, classic, I had to do it because Huntsy's there. I had to give the old chief line. Like, do you like big tits? So as I say it, I'm thinking it's one of the older guys. I hit Matt's son right beside me, and I'm like, you like big tits? And I turn and it's him. And I'm like, oh, I'm like, you know, and he goes, who doesn't? And everyone died. You know, I'm like,
oh,
I'm like, Matt, I'm sorry. He goes, dude, he's in the locker room. You think he doesn't hear that?
Yeah, right.
Like, but his reaction was, he just like, nothing. He goes, who doesn't?
Oh, that's classic.
Oh, man.
Oh, that's too good. Yeah, well, since you're talking about gear there and you got the masks in the background, we were actually texting with Franny a little earlier today.
Yeah, Franny was, I mean, you've seen the photos on all the Instagrams and things like that, right?
Yeah, insane work.
I got to Philly, and leading up to Philly, I was using Dave Gunnarsson, who's Dave Art, and he does a lot of guys in the league. And had Franny done any work with goalies in the past, or just not as
he frequently? Did when Ray first came? Yeah. He did one of Ray's razors. Yeah. So he had done him. I'm trying to think if he, I think that might be it.
Yeah. So
for you, but you were a big guy for
him. Yeah. You were just like, hey man, like you're welcome to continue using Dave Gunnarsson, right. But I got a buddy that paints, and you know, I think you showed me some of his work, and I mean, it was just next level. So
I can't believe what all those guys do, but Franny's stuff is just, so,
I mean,
the detail. I remember one of the pictures is with a guy with a visor on it. You could,
you got the glare on the visor.
Yeah,
glare
right.
On the visor.
Yeah.
I mean, like, how do you do that?
Like, yeah.
Like the first mask I got had, I got it downstairs. It's remember it had like the zombie Ben Franklin on it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right.
I didn't know what to expect to having a new mask come in from a guy that I had never worked with, and bought the mask, he always brought the mask to the arena and whatnot to deliver it. But I just couldn't believe the detail that he was able to get from airbrushing and whatever else he does to the mask. Right. But yeah, he was a lot of fun. And then, I used him for the first part in Winnipeg there. It continued kind of with like the zombie dead player theme that we had, basically all throughout Philly. And yeah, that guy is just, most talented artist I had ever seen. I think after I had used him, I think Devin Dubnik had used him as well. And it looks
Moose,
like
Moose used him, and Carter. Yeah,
looks like Carter's using him as well, which I mean, why wouldn't you, right?
The, right.
What he's able to do is just, in my opinion, second to none.
I always thought it was cool with your mask too, how you incorporated the players. And then even the equipment guys
in
the mask. I showed he had his replica. Yeah, he had his replica.
So cool.
And I was showing a couple of the guys that we had a big ball hockey tournament, Mace, this past weekend.
I saw that. Yeah.
Speaking of, you're a legend.
In I am a legend.
He's a goal scorer.
Right.
But I was showing someone, and I'm looking at it, I'm like, yo, dude, I look a little Chubb Rock there. He goes, you were.
You were.
He goes, you were a little Chubb Rock.
Little baby like, seal there now.
Can't you change that thing?
you're on TV. You got to make me look good.
Yeah, man.
You're adding 10 pounds before the camera's out of 10.
Yeah, I know. If you put the camera on, it was 20 pounds.
That's right. He was
awesome.
A lot of fun to work with. And yeah, again, the mask just speak for himself, right? So.
So we were just talking about during our little break there.
Yeah.
Thanks, kids.
Jake Voracek going back to Columbus. And I Riles, you missed it because you had no Wi-Fi for thanks to the birthday girl, Kinsley. Jakey going back there. I said to Mace, bartenders, the bars are going to be happy. And Mace goes, oh, he's happy? And I said, the bars. And I'm just busting chops. But he actually is pretty fired up to be going back there. I've talked to him
quite a bit.
High Street's going to be happy to see him there.
Yes.
He's main drag there.
Yeah. Hey, Mace, I think you were gone by then, but it was a couple of years ago. We were playing in Columbus, and they either love him or hate him, right? They act like he asked to be traded, but it was so funny because Jake He would do it in Philly too. If someone was heckling the boys, he would just, you know how he is. He would turn around and look them right in the eye. And it always, like, I don't think people expect it.
They know that you actually heard me.
Yeah. So we were playing in Columbus, and he's like, right where you walk on the bench, you know, there's that area. So I'm like standing right in there. It's if I got to get a stick or whatever. And this guy is sitting there with his daughter. And I kind of felt bad for his little girl because, you know, she was only about 12. And so anyway, it kind of gets quiet. And the dad just goes, F you, Jake, you fucking traitor. And Jake turns around and goes, you think I fucking asked to be traded? Are you fucking, what the fuck? I got traded. He's like, and I'm like, and the little girl starts crying. So I got her a stick. The guy shut right up. He's just like,
give him a Vortex stick?
Yeah, no, I think I gave her someone else a stick, but it was just so funny because he turned around and goes, I got traded. He goes, we didn't think I asked to be traded.
Yeah.
It was so funny, man.
Let me see how that shakes out going back there for him.
Yeah, hopefully everything goes well for him.
On the other side of that trade, though, you did play with Cam Atkinson in a couple of years, right?
Yeah, I was there for a couple of years with them. And I mean, Jakey always had that love-hate relationship with the fans, right? But the boy, Cam's a great guy, but Jakey's just one of those personalities in the locker room that, you know, kind of like, well, fuck, when I was there too, you know, Hartsey was traded.
Right.
That was a big loss. Like, going into that year without Hartsey being back, everything just felt different, right? Then Simmer was gone last year or 2 years ago.
2 years ago, yeah.
2 years ago. So that must have been a whole weird situation.
You know, that was weird not hearing 30, you know, how he yelled before for the goalies, you know, to go out.
And now Jakey being gone, like, that's just, it's going to be a weird adjustment, I think, for some of the boys in the dressing room. But again, with Cam, I mean, good player, good guy. So we'll see how that works out. But
we talked to Kevin Hayes was on with us. I felt like when the Flyers got Hazy, he kind of stepped in that role that we were missing.
Hartnell. Yeah.
Like you missed a guy like that in your room.
Sure.
First of all, he's a good player. Second of all, he brought so much more than what was on the ice. And we talk about stuff like this all the time, but when Kevin got there, he's kind of I don't want to say class clown, but the class clown, but knows when it's time, you know, to be ready to perform. And you need that. Like you were saying, mentally, sometimes it helps you to have a guy that makes you laugh.
You got to remember you're playing a fucking game at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's the truth, right?
It's fine to get, you know, focus and things like that, but that's where you got to have a fine balance of keeping things light and not stressing out over playing a hockey game at the end of the day.
That's right, yeah. Exactly. Love to hear that because I think so many young players already start stressing out over everything. And it becomes a mental health issue, really.
And I think from what I'm seeing in just this year of Elvis hasn't really been going a year. It's close to a year now. I think, I hate to say this, but it's a lot of the parents.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And with like what you had touched on, Mace, is like 12 months a year. I mean, Wayne Gretzky even said, like, play different sports, you know, like take your break, like you said. Then you're like really pumped. But I mean, I know that, like, all summer, Riles could tell you, like, he's been on the ice. He was on the ice all summer. You know, not every day, you know, once to twice a week. I can live with that, but I like him playing other things.
Sure.
And he enjoys it. I never even pushed him to play hockey. He just, you know, once I was gone, he wanted to, and I had the time. And now it's like, I can't believe how I'm just so, I feel so fortunate to be able to do this with him.
Absolutely.
Because now he's like, last week we had our ball hockey tournament and I missed the game. And I was like, oh my God, you know, because I've been so used to the last year and a half to doing every single thing with him. And I was like, damn, like, is there a way I could do it? But there was just no way I could do it because we had a big setup to do and it all worked out. But you miss guys like that. And I think, you know, I don't know about Columbus's room, but they did lose their captain, Foligno. Going to Boston and everything. Well, he got traded deadline, but to Toronto. But he'll be, for guys that don't know him, they're going to be
they're going to be
gonna what is going on here?
If he's going to be, you know, Jakey always comes in the year and he's, you know, fairly clean shaven. He's got a fresh haircut, but as the year goes on, he looks like fucking Gritty, right?
But thinks he's related.
Yeah, no, as you said, you know, if there's going to be guys that don't know anything about him, they're going to really enjoy what they're going to get out of it, right? And I don't know what kind of role they want him to be part of, but just having him in the room to, I'm sure they're going to have a younger team just based off of the turnover and whatever they're going through there. But to have somebody in the room that just kind of happy-go-lucky, doesn't stress out about too much or anything like that, that's what you need. And, you know, as you're saying with the younger kids, and I've been dealing with the younger kids, you're right, you see it, you see this pressure building at kids that are 6, 7, 8 years old. And where did you lose the fact that you're playing the game, right? So to have people in the locker room and that can keep you kind of loose and not, you know, fidgeting before a game and too nervous. That's really important, right?
Oh, super important. Having a guy like Jay come into your locker room, I just like laugh when I smile when I see him, because he's just got like such a character. But having like a veteran guy come in and having that personality just changed the room chemistry like immediately.
When we were in Columbus, we lived same building, as I was saying, with a bunch of other guys, and we lived on the same floor. And he was two doors down from me. And fuck, some nights he just roll in, and some of the stuff that he would do is just nobody else does it, but it's just
Jake.
And he'd always be like, Steve-O, like, what are you doing?
He'd call me Nasty Bear. He'd be like, Nasty Bear, Nasty Bear. That's what he always called me, Nasty Bear. But talk about a little bit, another thing dealing with the Flyers here. You were fortunate. I can't not bring this up. Like, you're fortunate enough to meet and play with Ray Emery, the late great. He was just an awesome guy, man. And it was, you know, you were able to play with him a little bit there.
Yeah. You know, I was fortunate is the only word I can really think about, because Razor was probably one of the best teammates you could ask for. Especially for myself, he was probably the best straight up goalie partner I ever had. Just in terms of the support he gave me. We've got, you know, goalies on, only one goalie can play. So sometimes there's a weird dynamic between them, but I never got that. Obviously, you know, me being a starter and Razor being the backup, I never got any negative feeling from Razor ever. One of the best teammates you could ever ask for. He was like the type of guy that you need anything, and it's no questions asked. Yeah, he's there. So when obviously news broke that he had his accident or whatever had happened there in Hamilton, I forget where I saw it come across, whether it was on TSN or something. I couldn't fucking believe it. You know, he was there for, I think it was Reno's charity.
Tournament
there, right? And I think I was actually supposed to be at that tournament. I forget what happened, because I was at the one prior, the year prior. I don't know why I wasn't there for it, but yeah, I saw that news broke, and I didn't even know what to think. I've been fortunate. I've never really lost anyone that was close to me or anything like that. So that was like kind of like the first time that somebody had passed away that was, you know, I had a relationship with and was close with. So that was just terrible news. And everybody that played with him in the Flyers organization, Ottawa, Anaheim.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's nobody that can say really a bad thing about the guy, because he was best teammate you could ask for, best goalie partner I ever had.
Smooth, eh? So smooth, man.
Sugar Ray.
Sugar Ray, man. He could rap. He could freestyle rap.
Yeah,
I'll never forget. We were in this bar, and they had some music going, and he starts doing his freestyle. He was sick. I mean, he sounded like he was a rapper. Like, he was so smooth, and he would say your name. He would say Riles. He made everything always rhyme. I'm like, dude, and you see people do that, but like, he would do it. We were just kind of mesmerized, and I'll never forget. He finished this wrap. He went on for like 2 minutes and he was like talking about this girl's shirt, this girl, you know, like me, whoever was with us. And he finishes. And this one chick, she's like, oh my God. She's like, you should be, she goes, why didn't you become a rapper? And he goes, cause they don't make enough. We're like, dude, you have an answer. You have the best. Everything you do is sick.
Oh, that's a great.
He used to say, like, if I had a shirt on, he liked to be like, sick jerse nasty. Like, just like a dress shirt or something. But he was just the smoothest guy. When we,
leg, too.
Yeah. Oh, man. We had a the first day I met him, Mace. I don't know if I ever told you this. I probably did. I picked him up. He had to do Daily News Live at Citizens Bank. Okay. So I said, well, bro, you know, I'll pick you up, take you down there. You don't know where you're going. He didn't have a car here at the time yet. So we go down there and we end up making a night of it, needless to say. And we ended up in we ended up in a Michael Jackson dance off and drinkers. That it was, people were losing their mind. He was like, damn. And he was like, he wanted to beat me. So I think he beat me, but anyway, he was just an awesome guy.
We crossed paths one summer after the season had ended, and he was back in Hamilton, and actually it might have been an all-star break or something like that. I don't even think it was summertime, but we both came back to the Toronto area, and he's like, what are you up to? I said, well, I'm actually leaving tomorrow morning. Me and my buddies were going down to Bahamas or something, right? And he says, well, come on out to Hamilton, come to Hess Village or whatever, right? So we meet up with Razor in Hamilton, have a fucking big, big night. And my conscience kicks in, like, oh, fuck, I got to be up at whatever time. So some of the boys and I, we head back to my place in Oakville. The other half of our guys go back to Razor's place and have a whole nother night over there.
Yeah.
We all were up in the morning to go to the airport. And they're like, holy fuck, man. He's just like, we just spent the whole night with Ray Emery.
Yeah.
It was like the same thing. He's like, you just started rapping out of nowhere. Yeah. Best guy we've ever met. And I mean, just what a good guy.
That's right.
He was awesome, man.
Too many good stories to,
I know,
to name.
But. You ain't kidding. Oh, man. So, Riles, Riles and I were talking about your coaches in Philly. You had three coaches here as well.
Yeah.
You came in. Did you come in with Labby's lat where he only made it a few games?
Yes. Yeah, so I got traded there the deadline year, or sorry, lockout. Labby was a coach. And then the next year, like he was fired like six
games in, right?
Six? I didn't think it was.
Chief took over.
It was less. It was quick.
Yeah.
Shitty training camp. And then.
Yeah. Well, we went to, that was one thing you may not remember. Mace, or you may act like you don't remember. we were in Lake Placid.
Oh yeah.
And I mean, it's before there's really anyone there. Like,
yeah.
One thing I did like about Labby was like, it was a team out. It was a team outing. So Everyone went out. It wasn't like, oh, the boys are going out once the coaches, like they went out, they had their fun with us, and it was a really good time. But I have to say, I'll never forget this as long as I live. And you may not even remember this, but it's not that bad. Don't worry. It was just, I just never laughed so hard. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. Anyway, we're all in this bar. Hal Gill's with us. He's got the shirt off, 6'7", the guy's chiseled. And he's just chirping me because of this black leather jacket I have on. He's like, nice jacket, nasty. What do you... Like, let me go stand on a chair and at least get eye level with him. And I'm like, I'm chirping him. I'm like, put your shirt on for God's sakes. You know, like, what are you doing? But anyway, I walk outside at the bar. There was this, I was going to sit in this, they had a bobsled that just sits here. People sit in it and take pictures. So I'm going out being an idiot. It's like 2 a.m. So I walk out, Riles, and I just hear, like this yelling. And I'm like, I turn. Here comes Mace, full sprint, right down whatever it is, Main Street. I don't know what you call that. There's no one out but us, like in the bar. He comes running by, and I'm like, where are you going? He goes, hotel. He just keeps going. Next morning, I'm like,
from?
I don't know. I said the next morning, I said, Mace,
I was like, "What the fuck? What were you doing last night?" He's like, "Oh, so you guys, you know, whatever." And I'm like, "No, no, I came outside and you were sprinting down the middle of the street." And he's like, "No, I was." Yeah, you were. I'm like, I don't know where you came from. I don't know what you said. You were going to a hotel. I just, oh, I wish I had my phone.
I had practice the next morning. I wanted to get a good night's sleep. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know, man. That wasn't probably very productive training camp, but the 3 to 4 nights we were there were long nights. I remember Ryan Podell, poor guy. We went to play golf when you guys went and did the team stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And he puked the whole morning. I'm like, how can you still be? Why aren't you dry heaving by now? He's still. It's unbelievable. But yeah, that was. Then you had Chief, and that's what I was gonna say too about Ray. He's had to start that playoff. We made it in the playoffs, right. And we lost in Game 7.
Yep.
And Ray won Game 2. He had a tough Game 1, tough Game 3. But I remember Chief saying, if we'd have had Mace, I think, you know, nothing against Ray, but you were our guy. You were the number one guy. And we lost 2-1 in Game 7. And those guys ended up going to the finals. I mean, that's what you just never know, right? Like, right. You never know what's going to happen. But I will say this. It was Game 2, and I'm standing in MSG, is my favorite building.
Me too.
And I hear someone banging on the glass, and they usually don't let anyone down there because they got all those people, and usually the stars are sitting right behind there. And someone's banging on glass. I turn around, it's Spike Lee. And I'm like, oh, my God. And I'm like, I'm trying to get my phone. I'm like, I want to take a selfie through the, you know, the glass. And he's trying to talk to me. I can't hear him. So he points like that. So I walk down and he goes, yo, he's like, what's up? And I'm like, Mars Blackman here again. And he starts laughing. Mace, you guys are probably too young, but he used to do this thing with Michael Jordan. He was this character, Mars Blackman. And it's got to be the shoes. That's what he would always say. But anyway, I had to say it because I grew up, you know, Mars Blackman and Michael Jordan. So anyway, he's like, yo, he's like, what's up, man? He gives me a hug and he says, where's Ray Emery? And I look, and Ray had just gone off the ice and he was playing. Mm-hmm. And I said, he just went off the ice. And he's like, oh man. He goes, all right, do me a favor. Please tell him that Spike Lee said good luck. And I said, I will. Like, no, I did take a selfie with him. So I'm like, no problem. So, you know, Ray, well, you have to. Don't you mean, my God, man, Spike Lee. So I go into the room, and you know, Ray, when he was playing, he was like, there's some guys you can talk to. There's some guys you kind of got to walk up softly.
Yeah.
He had a towel over his head, and he was like preparing. And I said, Ray, and he looks up, and he's like, what's up? And I said, I need to tell you something. He's like, what? You know, like, what do you want? You know, basically. And I'm like, dude, Spike Lee just told me to tell you good luck. And he goes, you serious? And he's like, start smiling. I said, swear to God. Spike Lee? I said, swear to God, man. Yeah. I took a picture. I'll show you after. I said, he hugged me and everything. Man. He goes, oh, sick, man. And we won that game. And I'm I remember saying afterwards, we got to get Spike Lee here for game 3. Like, we got to get
him in here, man. Up on the train with us. There you go.
Exactly. It was cool, though. It was pretty cool.
That's great.
But man, we were like,
I think about it a lot. Like, it's what would have happened, you know?
Yeah.
If we had won Game 7, and as you said, they got to the final, lost to LA that year, and it's, you never know. We never will, and that's the shitty part about it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Right, yeah. Give us one more game, but
yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
But, you know, playing in MSG, though, that was always a fun, my favorite place to play. What
really?
A cool spot, yeah.
I love that
cool. Right. Well, appreciate your time, Mace. I know you got some chores around the house there. You got to take times.
Appreciate you guys requesting me to come on. It's been neat to see you guys kind of progress and whatnot. So thank you for thinking about me and having me on. And
of course,
do you ever need another guest? And I'm more than happy to come back on.
Hey, dude, we'll call you.
You guys should be like new Howard Stern, eh? You got to get on fucking Sirius XM or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the next phase.
We see, Riley has two young daughters, Mace. You know, you know what that's about.
Yeah,
I got this guy yelling
things. Yeah, I was gonna say, I don't know what'd be worse, you know, having the girlfriend, having a little guy, you know.
I'm just,
especially if he's gonna fall in your footsteps.
Hey, whoa, hey, I blame my dad.
Yeah, right.
I blame Sudsy.
Papa Sudsy.
Oh man, this guy. We're at the concert the other night. There's this, obviously it's Guns N' Roses, so there's this woman standing there in the shortest cutoff jeans she could have, right, and the smallest top she could have, and she's got these heels on. They're like 10 inch heels. I know they're not 10 inch, but they're really cute. So she's standing there, she's like 6'5" in her heels, and he's nudging me. He nudges me, and I like look down. I'm like, what? He goes like that, and I turn, I'm like, you like that? He goes,
she's 7 years old.
Just turned seven, boys.
What is he, a grade? What is he, grade one, grade two?
Two, yeah. And like, he gets mad. I told someone today, like, he likes his new teacher, but he had a crush on his first grade teacher, like big time, big time crush, man. Every picture they ever took, he's like nestled up right beside Miss Hammett. So
big grin.
Look out.
Yeah.
He's a master.
Look out is right.
Keep him
away from my dog.
I was gonna say, Riley,
you might have to watch out.
No, he
buy a shotgun there.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Ken's has her birthday party Saturday. I said, we're coming. I said, we'll be there in between his hockey games. And he goes, no, Elvis can't come.
Yeah.
It's a pool party.
Leave Elvis at home.
And then I said to him, well, make sure Ash has a nice bikini on. Then he goes, all right, you can't, neither one of you guys can come.
Beautiful.
Thanks, Mace, man. We love it. Love you, man. Miss you, buddy.
Yeah, it's good seeing you guys. It's been way too long. Miss all the fun we used to have. Good time.
Well, hopefully things get better and you can move around and we get to run into each other here.
Absolutely. Would love it.
Be awesome.
All right, guys. Well, listen.
All right.
Good catching up. Fun watching you guys do your thing. So
thanks, man. Appreciate it, brother.
Let's not wait so long till next time, eh?
Yeah, for sure.
All right, guys.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks,
Mace. Later, Mace. That episode was brought to you by SettleMeyerSkateSharpening.com for all your hockey needs and the best sharpening around. Visit Nasty at SettleMeyerSkateSharpening.com and BodyCheckWellness.com for all your CBD and functional mushroom needs. You got stress, anxiety, check us out at BodyCheckWellness.com. And a big thank you to Stone Cold Steve Mason
for
hopping on with us and sharing some stories as well as some insights into his personal life of what he went through throughout his career. So it was nice to reconnect with Mace and talk hockey and talk real talk.
Yeah, man. Miss that guy. He's a good dude.
Yeah, he really is.
It's good catching up with him, man. You're right though. It's just you know, it's like he kind of said there, you know, people think, they don't want to hear any complaints, but at the end of the day, everyone's human. Everyone goes through things and all of us do, not just athletes. Everyone goes through things, but it's not as easy sometimes as people think it is, obviously. And he had a tough time. I mean, you're 23, 24 years old getting on a plane and I'm either going this way or that way, man. You're pretty young to be feeling that anxiety that way. It can't be easy, but you know, he got to Philly and decided to go north instead of south. So
yeah, right. Yeah, he tacked on an extra 4.5 years with the Flyers, and another year in Winnipeg, and another five and a hook years on his career. But what's more important was he's able to preserve his mental health, because as you mentioned, I mean, stress is a killer. Doesn't matter what line of work you're in, stress, pressure. I mean, it gets to the core. It really affects the nervous system and the brain. And, you know, as he talked about, I didn't realize that, you know, until he told the story, how affected he was by it. But I can't imagine, you know, obviously I went through my own version of that, but I also wasn't a goaltender that's, you know, taking on the brunt of all the pressure.
Yeah,
I can kind of lay in the weeds on the bench, because that's where I was sitting most of the time. But nonetheless, I felt what he felt, you know, in my own version. But It's not easy. Yeah. And yeah, people make the comments about you're making the big bucks and you got to, you know, toughen up and all that good stuff. But at the end of the day, we're all human. We're just fortunate enough to play a game for a living. And, you know, and obviously it is a luxury in the Western world here to play in the National Hockey League. And, but the issues guys deal with are the very same issues that the real world deals with. So just 100%. To humanize the person here and understand we're all in this together, you know, just it's not about athlete versus non-athlete or whatnot. It's just about being real, you know. Pressure crumbles people. So
it does.
I was trying to support people, and it's great for him to be open about this, because this is how we kind of make change.
Yeah, it's funny how it also on a lighter side is, you know, winning that Calder Memorial Trophy, like it never really hit him, you know, till later. He said, you know, like, actually, that's a pretty big deal. Yeah, it is. It's a really big deal, man. I thought that was kind of funny, because we never really ever talked about that, to be honest, when he was here. Yeah. I mean, why would you really talk about it? But I guess, you know, finally hit him once he was done playing that, damn, that's a pretty major award.
Yeah,
you know, that I was able to win. And it's impressive, you know, any of the kids that come into the league and win that trophy, you're a pretty damn good player. If you're, you know, obviously if you're in the National Hockey League, you're a pretty damn good player, obviously. Yeah. But to win that trophy is pretty, pretty impressive.
Yeah. And it was interesting to hear him talk about, like, it almost seemed easy for him. Mm-hmm. And you hear this a lot, you know, that guys' first years in the league seem easier. I'm not going to say easy, because nothing in life is easy, but easier because maybe the there's not quite the same pressure. Yes, there's pressure, but, you know, you don't have, you know, all the fans ripping on you for, you know, previous year stuff. You haven't built that, you know, that name in the community yet. And you're really going off pure, you know, energy and spirit, right? I mean, you're basically living your childhood dream in the moment, and you're kind of rolling with it. So, interesting to hear him talk about that, you know, and then he wins the Calder. But then you hear the next year is the hardest year. It's like, it's, you know, it's bouncing back and doing it all over again. And I struggle with that. It was like, oh yeah, my first year, full year with the Flyers, you know, fighting all the tough guys. And, you know, I thought I did relatively well. I got, you know, the most improved player with Kobe there with the Flyers. And then, and then the next year is like, wow, God, I gotta do this all over again. I gotta stay, you know what I mean? I gotta stay consistent. And that's, you know, I think that's where the mind games start. And, you know, it's all about consistency. Well, in life, but, you know, if you want to stay in the major leagues in any sport, you have to stay consistent. And as soon as you start being inconsistent, that's when, you know, you become replaceable. So
exactly.
But nice to see him find his way. He had a hell of a career. Hell of a guy.
He's only 33 years old. And I meant to say this during the thing, because I don't know. I hope it doesn't make him mad. I don't think it does. He always laughs at me, but I'm like, dude, you should still be playing. You're 33, you know, for goalies.
Sure.
You know, and another thing, I do say that to him all the time, like busted his chops just to mess around. But I even, you know, he's been done 3 years now. He's only 30 years old, but he also told of how it just took a toll on him mentally, you know? So, I say that lightly with him just because he's still such a young man. But one of the things I did bring up is the athlete he is. You're talking about an athlete. This guy is an athlete, man. Like, he made saves. Yes, obviously he came up being a goalie, but there were some saves where, you know how you have some goalies that, not that I'm a goalie expert, so I'm not trying to say that, but they go down their butterfly, they're big. This guy can jump, move. Right. Like, athletic, he just saves so on athletic. Yeah, right. Like, so, and not that other goalies aren't athletic. Everyone that's playing in the National Hockey League are good athletes, are great athletes. Some of the best, but man, he was just a really good athlete. Big too, like a big guy. Like, I don't think people realize how big Mace is.
Yeah, no, I know, right?
He's a big man. He was always in shape, pretty jacked for a goalie, you know, like nowadays most goalies are in way better shape, but, anyway, he had a good career, man. And, you know, I'm glad to see, like you said, he's healthy and feeling way better. And that's awesome to see.
Yep. Well, you made the right choice. You know, you got to listen to the heart and follow it. And, you know, like you said, like you're joking, like, oh, you should still be playing. But if you're not feeling it, you know, you got to make a move, right? And that's in any walk of life and any career. So props to him for stepping away and following his heart, because that's what it's all about. Now he's got an opportunity to spend time with his children and find his way on the other side of the fence. So wish Mace nothing but the best. Appreciate him hopping on.
Yeah, Mace Daddy.
Yeah, so that's a wrap. Episode 40 of Nasty Knuckles. Be sure to tune in next week for episode 41. Until then, folks, stay safe.
See you, knuckleheads.